it's really bizarre, wouldn't you, to have like at a very early age something inside of you that says, shut this down. Do not be you. When I look back, I have a lot of compassion for myself because every single day I was presenting as someone that I wasn't, and I was pretending to fit in. Like, that's some pretty intense trauma. I really awoke to the spirit of my being, and my counselor there said to me one day when I was leaving a session with her, she goes, I want to tell you two things. She said, you've got to get a new God and you got to learn how to forgive or you're going to die.
Wow. Welcome to the Soulish Podcast. My name is Whitney Apke and I'm your host. On the Soulish Podcast, we talk about the soul journey, the body, soul, spirit connection, and I get to share my journey with you guys, my experiences that are inspiring, encouraging, you know, uplifting to you guys, as well as bring on guests who are amazing people with amazing hearts that are doing amazing work in the world to help us all on our soul journey. And so it's an awesome privilege to be on this podcast. This podcast started about 3 years ago. I was pretty much on my face, lots of tears, and I was just asking God for direction. I felt very lost. I had just kind of broken out of my Christian religion and was kind of like navigating and trying to see what felt right and what felt in alignment without completely, you know, releasing those values and morals and even beliefs about God. But I was so curious to see what God would look like outside of that box that I had grown up in, what life would look like. And I also was leaving a five-year relationship. There was a lot of transition, and I was basically in a career that I was like, this is not me. This is not what I want to be doing. I'm not passionate about this, but I know that I'm meant for more. And I know that I'm meant to be of service to others, not like working at a tech company, you know, trying to make my schmill, you know? So I basically was face first on my bed back in San Jose, California, and just asking God for direction, asking my guides, asking, you know, my angels, like, please show me, like, tell me, like, where do I even start? What do I even do? Like, I just want to help people. And I heard, start a podcast. And I'm like, a podcast? Like, I have no idea what a podcast is. I think I was only listening to like Oprah Super Sundays. And so I had like no podcast experience, had no clue how to even do it. And here I am 3 years later, still with y'all. And man, has there been a lot of growth, not just in the tech or in anything else, but even just personally. And this podcast, over the 3 years, I've had just amazing connections with people. A lot of the people that have been guests are now still even friends and some of my best friends. And it's just been an amazing experience. And I know that from your comments, from you guys DMing me, messaging me, emailing me, sharing with me how these episodes and conversations, whether it's solo or with a guest, have inspired you and uplifted you, it's everything. Like, I will never stop doing this because of that. It means everything to me that something that I share or that a guest shares could be the little secret sauce that you need, the little lift, you know, that you need, the little support, you know, or different idea or different, you know, thought maybe, or feeling about something, different perspective, right? It inspires you, it encourages you, it keeps you going, you know, because this journey is not easy. It is not an easy soul journey. Lots of things come up in this journey, in this incarnation, and we are in it together. And so I think that's too, like, one of the things that I love is realizing how not alone we are, you know, how not alone I am, how not alone you are, that we really truly have like soul, you know, mates, and that we are in this together, and we can learn from each other, we can glean from each other, whether it be a mistake or a success, you know, failure, success, good decision, bad decision, you know, karma, whatever it is, right? And so I just had a beautiful conversation with someone that I actually work really closely with, and I've been wanting to get him on the podcast for about a year because he is just somebody who is so open-hearted. I get to see him raw and real pretty much almost daily, if not weekly. We meet and we work together with a program called Living the Course, which is co-founded by him and Aaron. And Mark Anthony Lord is somebody that you should definitely follow, definitely connect with. He is somebody who has had so much experience in different fields and different things. And he just really kind of has gleaned from every season of his life. And he has curated, whether it be programs, workshops, masterclasses, one-on-one client coaching calls. He has curated so many things gleaned from his experience in order to help people step into full authenticity, alignment, freedom. And that's what I love about what he does, is he's all about that forgiveness of self, forgiveness of others, forgiveness of God, with the goal, in the mindset, in the intention of finding full freedom from anything that basically is a self-abandoning, rejection, guilt, the list could go on, just anything that is a block, anything that is a limitation. And he is so brilliant around the ego and how to identify the ego, how to heal anything that is ego related that would cause you to think that you're separate from others, from God, and instead come into more unity and love. And so I love his work. Mark, for those of you guys who don't know him, Mark is a minister. He actually had a Catholic upbringing, and he has now since become a minister, kind of like non-denominational Christian, you know, in that realm. And he's internationally recognized as a speaker, author, successful entrepreneur, coach. In 2003, Mark founded the Bodhi Spiritual Center in Chicago, and building it from three people in his living room to over 1,000. During his 14 years at Bodhi, Mark trained over 100 spiritual coaches, 10 ministers, and taught transformational spiritual classes to thousands. Most of these courses he created himself. He is the co-founder and teacher at Living the Course, an online program global community with over 2,000 members. Mark is the author of Thou Shall Not Suffer, which is a 7 steps to a life of joy, and the 7 living words. So he has amazing things, amazing content, amazing things to help you. He is the creator of Awaken to Miraculous Love, and this is the program that we talk about in this episode, so keep your ears open for this. It's a spiritual relationship coaching program specifically designed for women who are ready to transform their relationship paradigms so they can love themselves and others without fear. And his personal mission is to help people heal their unconscious commitment to suffering, forgive all, and live an inspired life. He's just fantastic, amazing. Our conversation, he shares very openly, very vulnerably about, you know, his suffering in his life, the experiences that he has had, the trauma that he has healed, how he healed it, and how he's helping other people heal it, men and women. We talk a lot about special relationships in this episode, and we do use a lot of like ACIM lingo, which ACIM, it's right here, but you probably can't read it. A Course in Miracles is an amazing text that I highly, highly, highly recommend. And if you also want to get into the daily lessons and you want a community that is supportive around the daily lessons, Living the Course, shameless plug, is amazing. It is such an amazing community. It's daily lessons and masterclasses that both Aaron and Mark also curate. And it's just amazing. It takes you through the whole process. It's amazing. And Mark also is just fantastic in breaking down some of those words like holy. And so I don't want you to be turned off by this language. It actually has a completely different meaning than is related to like Christianity or Catholicism or anything like that. It's actually different meanings, but same word, because it's also steeped in A Course in Miracles, which is where this comes from too. So I just am so excited to present to you this conversation. Mark is just an amazing human being, and I have every way that you can connect with him, get involved with him. If you feel after this conversation so connected, so endeared, and you also want to work with him, all of that is in the show notes, all those links. So go ahead, click, follow him on Instagram, Facebook, go ahead and connect with him on his website. Mark is an amazing human being and you won't regret it. So love you guys so much. Thank you again for following. Thank you for subscribing to this podcast, for being my amazing soulish tribe. I love you guys so much. And here is an amazing conversation with Mark. Oh, Mark, it's so good to have you here on the Soulish podcast. Finally, I've kind of been waiting for this moment to happen. Thank you so much for being here, for taking the time to have this conversation. So happy to have you.
I'm super happy to be here. I mean, we've been working together for, over a year and a half. We've never sat down to just talk like this. So it's very meaningful.
It is. When I first met you, it was just so unique because you're such a unique personality, and just your energy is so amazing, especially in person. And so I'm really excited to share you with the Soulish podcast community, the tribe, because you're somebody that has such like an open heart to help people and to work with people through the shit, through like their things, their stuff, their muck. And you really don't mind it at all. And I think that's something that has been really inspiring to me, because I feel like I still have pretty judgy nose around things. I'm like, that really smells. You're not that way at all. You're like, oh, that's so cool.
I don't know, over time and all the work I've done, like I just don't judge anything. Like, and I don't want to. I don't want anyone to feel judged. I'm so committed to just creating safe space. And even when we do that, you know, people still, they contract because of their own self-execution. But I don't care what people do or say, just come talk, because if you talk, you'll be seen and there'll be an opportunity there.
That's so good. It's so good. Now, let's get into your journey a little bit, because I know snippets, but I don't know everything. Okay. So you grew up in a household with lots of siblings, which is like amazing. But you had a very separate, very interesting, unique journey amongst all your other siblings. I really did.
And it created for the life I have today, but during it was very hard. I was grew up in a Catholic family, grew up in a kind of a blue collar neighborhood in the suburbs of Detroit, but my parents weren't blue collar, but they were pretending to be, because I don't know, it was sort of weird. Like, so there's sort of all that, and then all the Catholic guilt stuff, but I'm a good man. And I felt that very, very early, like 2, 3, 4 years old. You could have called it that, but I felt different. Something was really like, I'd watch the boys do what they're like, I look like the boys, but I feel like the girls. And like, it's really bizarre, Whitney, to have like at a very early age, something inside of you that says, shut this down. Do not be you. So I was like learning how to not be me from like 3 or 4 years old. And literally having to pay attention and retrain my behaviors and sort of, oh, reel this in, that's not good. Like it's, when I look back, I have a lot of compassion for myself, because every day of childhood, every single day, I was presenting as someone that I wasn't, and I was pretending to fit in. Like that's some pretty intense trauma.
Yeah. Especially so early on in your early developmental years, and that like level of self-abandonment and learning how to do that and do that so well, because you're also self-protecting, I think, in a way. It's like, there's something unique about me. I don't understand it. I don't know how it relates to anyone or anything in this world. No one else seems to feel this way. So I'm just going to survive. I don't know how else to be. And conformity at its finest, right?
Totally.
And our culture's all about that.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's shifted a bit now for younger people, but for me, back then in the 70s. Like, it was just like, you didn't see people like me, on television or in shows or in movies or things like that. So it just really was the taboo thing to me. So, I threw God out in my teen years because I figured God threw me out. So it was sort of that reaction, like, well, screw you kind of thing. But then in my 20s, I really got into a drug spiral, really, really intense and fast. I mean, I went down like in a year, like just bottomed out and ended up in a treatment center in Canada. My parents sent me to a private treatment center, 24, 25 years old. And I basically kind of like wake up there and I'm like, where the hell am I? And what is this? And it was the middle of winter in northern Canada. And I'm like, well, I'm going to leave. And they opened the door and they're like, okay, go ahead. The closest town is about an hour away driving. So good luck. And so, of course, I stayed.
Smart.
But it was, Whitney, it was the most spiritual thing. I'm telling you, it was a blessing beyond words because I really awoke to the spirit of my being. And my counselor there said to me one day when I was leaving a session with her, she goes, I want to tell you two things. She said, you've got to get a new God and you got to learn how to forgive or you're going to die. And those words, for some reason, they just pierced my heart. And I didn't know who God was, and I had no clue what forgiveness was. Like, I had no clue. But for some reason, it's like one of those things where someone just says one thing to you and it just pierces your soul. And I really feel like she changed the trajectory of my life.
I don't know if you've ever been asked this, but have you ever gone back to visit?
No, that place doesn't exist anymore. They got really big. They moved down to America and then they got taken over by insurance companies and then it kind of went wonky and the whole magic disappeared. But I do think about that woman who worked there and I'm like, God, I wish I could see her.
I know. That's so amazing. And I just know from working with you for like over a year and a half, 2 years, that like you do that for so many other people. Like it's so cool to see that now, how many years after. And it's like, gosh, you do the same thing for people. How
Never kind of,
cool.
I know I never, I sort of connected it, but I never connected it as clearly. It's just, that is really cool.
That is really cool.
I do the very thing that I was told to do to save my life. Yeah, you're right. I'm just sort of passing it on.
You're reproducing it for other people because other people need to hear that.
Well,
And I love that.
because so many are so messed up around God like I was. Like, I hated the word. I don't have any of that baggage anymore, but I had to go through it. I had to really do a lot of healing. And then the whole forgiveness game, nobody knew how to, nobody was even doing it, truth be told. I mean, I did not, but it became my quest and it became my healing power. Like, I was healed so on so many levels through the practice of forgiveness.
What was like your first forgiveness like need? Was it for yourself? Like in how you had kind of like gotten into drugs or your self-abandonment? What was your first forgiveness need in order to step forward?
Well, it's a big one, but I'm glad to go there. You can cut this out of the podcast if it's too intense. But in my recovery, getting out of the treatment center and starting to do some 12-step work, I started getting more and more sober. And then I realized that I had been covering up a sexual abuse trauma from my childhood. So, which is often what happens to people. It's so traumatic, they just completely dissociate. And then in order that, but the pain of it key is what leads you to self-abuse and kind of a my own kind of suicide path was in reaction to that. So as that started to come uncovered inside of me, that was my deep, deep, deep forgiveness work. And it took a lot of years, like, well, I don't know about a lot, but it was about 4 years of, therapy and 12-step work and deep spiritual practice and, anything I could get my hands on. And I had this moment to make it shorter. I was traveling a lot for my work. I worked as a dancer and choreographer. And, I was being flown to Chicago to work on a show. And when I was flying back, the memories, I was living in LA, flying back to LA, and the memories got triggered inside of me. And I just closed my eyes and I was like, I asked that forgiveness set me free. I asked that forgiveness set me free. God, please heal this. Please. I was like in a begging inside kind of mode. And I had my eyes closed. I was turned away by the window and I was taken out of the trauma story. And I was literally told by what felt like the voice of God, see this how I see this. And I was, the abuse was taken off and it was just light dancing with light. And I was told that's all that's ever happening. And back of everything is light dancing with light. That is God's world. That's really the truth. And the overlays are all our unforgiveness, our guilt, our projections. And I had mine just taken off and healed and just gone. Like I've never suffered from that. I've never suffered from that experience ever again.
That's
I know.
amazing.
Truly, truly, I wish I could bottle it.
Well, what's even, I guess, most powerful in that is the choice to believe in the fact that you can find healing and forgiveness. And that may be like one of the first steps, right? In order to even make the step into forgiving and asking for forgiveness or asking for forgiveness rightness to happen is the belief that it can even happen. And I think for the people that really suffer with trauma, pain, they've had awful experiences in their life, they're so overwhelmed. Like, how do I ever even, can I ever even, is this even possible, is kind of like the thought, you know? And the belief or the projection. And so I think what's really powerful out of that story is just even believing that it's possible. And that's even a step.
Well, and I tell you, I mean, I didn't even know that that would happen. You know what I mean? Like I literally was given this miracle healing. I wouldn't have known myself. I wouldn't have known unless I had it done unto me. And now I live my life. I forgive everyone for everything. Like that is my bar. And if someone's mad at me or upset with me, I'm like, oh, you get into my forgiveness circle now.
I can attest to
I
that.
mean, I'll just like go. Like I'm just like I will not give up on someone. If someone decides to go or leave me or do whatever, that's their choice. Like where they're losing, where live. But inside of me, I've got to do everything until I get back to peace.
I love that. Oh, that's so good. That's so juicy. What led you to even go into ministry? Was it all of that? Like, how did you go from dancer to minister and doing what you do today? It's so unique.
I got turned on by the spirituality, by that treatment center. So like that definitely cracked it open for me. And I was working a lot as a dancer, but I just had this like, this doesn't feel like my life. Like I, even while I was, and I was really, I'm so grateful for the success I've had, traveled the world and made great money as a dancer and choreographer. And I know so many people are like struggling to do it, and I never struggle. So I'm just so grateful for that. But the whole time I was like, this isn't it. This isn't it. And I would feel a little bad about that because I'm like, so many people wish that my life was their it. And I was sort of like, yeah. So there was that. And so I was curious. And then I did this breath work session. And it was during the breath work session that I had this revelation that dancing had the, and choreography had the energy of producing and creating and expression. And I loved all of that. And I was thinking about becoming a high school teacher because I loved teaching and I loved all of that. But then ministry was like, oh, it's got the performance, it's got the teaching, it's got the spirituality. It had everything inside of it. It had all of me inside of it. And that day, that breathwork session, I just, it clicked and then I never looked back.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and
That's
that was
so
about
cool.
26 or 27 years old. It was about 27 when that happened.
And you've since also gone on your journey of like even yourself, like healing yourself, forgiving yourself, and then also entering into relationships. Like as you're finding your purpose, you're also, diving into love and like relationships and all of that, like at the same time. And so I know that's a lot of the work that you're doing, and a lot of like in Living the Course, which is where you and I work together. It's really cool because there's a lot of holy relationships, healing love, miraculous love. Like we do a lot of workshops which are really curated, from your heart space. And so that's a lot of the work that you do within Living the Course. And outside, you have also a program for women to come into that miraculous love to heal from suffering. What has been kind of like the little nuggets from the relationships or, anything like that, whether it's been romantic or friend or family related, that you kind of are like, this is a golden nugget, and like presenting this in a course. What are some of those like little gems?
Well, I think it, and I'm just getting this now while I'm talking to you. I think it was the impetus of forgiveness and my commitment to, use relationships as the place for my healing. But more than the drugs, more than anything like that, I really did struggle in romantic relationships and I don't know, I think because of my childhood where I was always pretending to be someone else. You know what I mean? Like I never felt full relationships as a kid because you're, and I think we all do that. I think all of us as kids, we present parts of ourselves that we think people want to like or that we hope people like, but then we feel lonely in back of that because we've abandoned ourselves. So I spent a lifetime, my childhood was about abandoning Mark. And so now I get into relationships and I'm like, oh, I don't know how to be authentic. I don't know how to be real. It felt very vulnerable. I really struggled with finding my truth, speaking my truth, even like, what do I want? How do you say yes when you mean yes? How do you say no when you mean no? Like I had some pretty basic components of relationship missing in my makeup. And so I did what I do. I do my spiritual practice. I do my spiritual work. That's where I heal. That was the gift I was given. So I just kept doing that. And The Course in Miracles is, I think, one of the best books on the planet to help people move from what it calls special relationships to holy relationships. And that really has been my journey over the years of growing in that direction. And then I discover, you know how you, when you're in your own kind of sickness or your own brokenness, you think no one else is like you. You're the only one with a problem. Well, I've since found out that there's more than me who have relationships with you. So
It's so true. It's
it's
really hard to not feel so victimized by life and circumstance.
yeah. So I just was like, and I love women. I just have that gay best friend persona. It's my favorite role, I think, on the planet. And so I just started like praying and like, how can I use this more? What's my next expression of my work? And it was coming to me to create a program to help women. I mean, I work with men too, I would, but primarily I work with women, helping them heal. And as I started talking to my girlfriends and my clients and people, it's like, and you know this, Whitney, women really feel like they have an extra burden when it comes to relationship and their over responsibility and their overcompensation and their denial of their self themselves. Like there's some from, I'm trying to remember I said like from age 2 and 3, I was abandoning myself. I think with girls from age 2 and 3, you're being conditioned that there's the,
100%.
yeah. So I just became really interested in helping women unravel out of that. Because I've since come to know, and we did talk about this previously, Whitney, romantic relationships have gotten way too much power. They've been given way too much power in our society today.
Like they're the most important relationship on the planet.
Yeah, but romance isn't meant to be sustained. Like it's not. Like, I mean, you can sustain it in marriage, you can do things like that, but the infatuation stage, the you're my one and only, together we'll conquer the world, like that's all the Disney fantasy stuff that leads us into relationships. But then we get there and we're like, oh, this doesn't feel like that anymore. And
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of relationships could really move through transformation and be deeply fulfilling if they knew the path.
Yeah. I think that's just as being a single lady over here, I'm 35. My life has not at all gone how I was taught and told and instructed from like pretty much infancy. Like my mom ingrained in me, God has your one special man for you, like blah, 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 you know, for the rest of your life. And to the point where my brother Aaron and I, we would actually pretend marry and we would have like a little marriage ceremony like all the time, probably like at least once a week when we were really young. 'Cause we just saw our parents and we were like, if we want to stay together forever, which we do, we need to get married. So like, let's pretend, you know? And when I poor little guy, when I broke it to him, like probably around 6 or 7, when it really struck me that my mom was saying one special guy was not my brother or my dad, like I thought I could marry my dad too. There was just no concept of what that was. It just was forever together, right? And when I broke it to him, like there's a different guy, you know, that God is, woo, that was like, he was wail crying. Like it was like the worst thing I could ever say to him. And so I think like with that, like there's been just this development, not only this hope deferred, which the Bible talks a lot about, of like hope deferred makes the heart sick. And I think I have struggled in season, like after season after season, of having hope deferred and feeling less than, or like I didn't do what I was supposed to do because I was supposed to change my name by now. I was supposed to become a part of another family and I was supposed to have babies by now, like at minimum two, you know? And I have not hit any, not a single marker as far as like what a woman's life is supposed to be like. And so I think that specialness, it's like it's been curated perfectly for all of us, but especially women, it's like I also have to wait for the guy to come to me. I have to wait for the guy to pick me because that's part of like at least the Christian box is, you know, the holy man of God will see you and will hear the voice of God that you are the one. And we'll pick you. And then you'll get married. And then it's all there. But I think that's what's hard is like the special relationship has been like literally curated perfectly for us as women. And so we sit here going, it hasn't happened, and I've done everything. I was a virgin till I was almost 29. I lived a perfect, holy life. I did everything I possibly could do to hit every like, you know, marker for the holy man of God to choose me. And so there's a lot of also then resentment that I've had to work through, which even if you're not a Christian woman, just even that of like your knight in shining armor, and I think I've done everything I could possibly do, and that's never happened, or it's never worked out, or, you know, I've been unlucky in love, and that story is like really difficult. So I love the fact that you can feel the feels, you know, like you're tapped in, you're tuned in, you feel the same, you can identify it because it's something that needs to be healed. And I think women, although we love chatting about it, like women hearing from women, I think it's really beautiful and needed to have a different voice that is speaking the same language, just in it using different words, right?
And I don't, none of us really knows the mystery of why a desire that feels so true from such an early age, and it just,
Yes.
everyone else is getting it. Everyone else is, it's sort of like one of those
Yeah.
weird things that I can imagine can really make you feel like, what the hell is wrong with
What
me?
did I do? Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think you did anything, but I do think your conditioning is different than your calling.
Yeah,
But it
for
doesn't take you out
sure.
of the game. It doesn't. You're not even close to out of the game at all, because our desire to be in relationship is, I believe, of God. I think that is a genuine, life is relationship. That's how we know ourselves. That's how we know each other. And in connection, in heart connection, we get the kind of the feeling of our spirit and the sharing of our spirit. So it is a sacred thing.
Yes.
It just has to be approached from a completely different paradigm. And that's what is up. I think there's currently in the world, I believe, a whole new idea of what is marriage for, what is about, why are we getting into relationship at all? Like all of this is being recalibrated and
yes.
I believe spiritualized.
Yes.
Can I tell my Byron Katie story real quickly?
Yes.
Okay, because this
yes, please.
Changed me. I have been so blessed to know Byron Katie for years and have hung out with her. And I was at this 3-day event in Ojai where she lives. There was just like 10 of us or 12 of us there. And she was talking and she told the story about her current husband asked her to marry him. And so she went and asked her children and I think her two ex-husbands and her family and her friends. And she said to everyone, is there any reason why I should not marry him? That was her only question. Is there any reason why I shouldn't marry him? And everyone's like, no, he's great. No, he's great. It got a, you know, stamp of approval and all around. So she went back and she said, yes, I'll marry you. And she told the story and I raised my hand. I was like, Katie, if I asked you to marry me, I would want you to marry me because you love me. And she looked like that Scooby-Doo, like, what? Like her head was like, why would I choose anything out of love when love is what we are? And I didn't get it. It took me a while to go, oh, she's so awakened to the oneness of love as identity that it's no longer the choice point. You don't choose from what is. You choose, there's lots of reasons to choose. You can choose by preference. You can choose by match of, you know, there's 100 reasons to choose, but not because I love you. That will be the one reason that you will have to taste the bitter side of that.
Wow.
I don't know if that makes sense, but I know it was profound and it stuck with me. I'm like, this is the problem with most people.
Yes.
They don't understand that love is not the place to choose from.
No.
It's, you know, does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Because oh, good.
Absolutely. And I hope it translates to the community listening. So what I get from that is that it's been so fantasized and romanticized and made into this thing of like, this is the ultimate to be loved by somebody else and for them to love you. But what Katie is saying is that that should already exist. And that, like, there's so much more to make the decision on that. And how I relate that to is I have realized that I have so many soulmates on this planet. And yeah. I have met so many of them that are not fitting into that romantic box. They end up being brothers that I need, or just dear friends, you know, that I need in my life that are serving a purpose. That have come into my life for a reason, and there's a clear soul connection and maybe attraction on some level, but it doesn't have to be like that, you know, like it's like, oh, like I feel like we know each other and like we grew up together because we just get each other. That doesn't mean it has to be that, like it has to be that box. But how many people would find somebody like that and feel there's a connection, specialize it and go, well, because we love each other and because we have a connection, there you go. And yeah. There's no like counsel, you know, there's no like other prerequisites to getting married, you know,
yeah.
Because it's just because of that, we're good. And that, like you said, doesn't necessarily last because that could be a seasonal thing. That may not be a forever thing.
Well, the underbelly of it is I'm choosing you over everybody else. I'm going to love you differently than everybody else.
Yes.
What you're really saying is you're my prisoner. Like yeah. I own you, you own me. And if we break yes. these contracts, I'll kill you. Like that. Like it's, yeah. And then it becomes about control. It becomes about hiding. Like it's really, it's not, the new paradigm of relationship is hard for us now because it's new. But it's about unconditional love and acceptance. It's about,
yes.
I don't own you. I want you to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's about creating the space of acceptance that's so big that whatever comes into the field, you too can use it to deepen in your own self-love and your connection.
Yes.
It can be a very beautiful, deeply fulfilling thing, but you have to get off the game of special love.
Yeah. And it's thousands of years of conditioning. And for women, we've been bought, sold, traded, you know, yep. bartered with. Yep. We've been used as a commodity and as a vehicle for wealth and also generations to pass down the wealth, you know, make babies, make sons specifically to pass down that wealth. So it's, I think it's also in our DNA to feel like, well, I want to be owned. You know, I want to be someone's. I want to be, it goes beyond being like dominated and controlled. I think there's like, we've even romanticized that, you know, and even sexualized that. And it's, it kind of goes beyond that. So to have a completely different paradigm of like freedom, total freedom to express, freedom to communicate, freedom to be, and yeah. to have your being. And there's no, you know, restrictions in that sense of like, I own you, you know, you own me, that kind of thing. It's a very different thing. I think it's going to take a little bit for us to get there on a global, cultural, societal level, because it's still very much a way for you to say, I own you. And that's my security, is that I control your life, or, you know, there's that kind of dependency kind of thing, yeah. which is yeah, specialized. Yeah,
for sure. For sure. And working with so many women and talking to so many women and creating this program, like, this is what's shocking, Whitney. So many people are what I call in relationships, silently suffering.
Yeah.
Happy. They're not self-expressed. They don't feel safe. They don't, like, it really is hell.
Yes.
And so they got what the world says is what the golden ticket is. Oh, you're married. Yay. Check the box.
Right.
But they sit there with this secret that, like, well, I got what I was, what I wanted. I got what I was told I was supposed to get, but now there's something wrong with me. Like, it's tough. And that's why I like creating space for those conversations to come yeah. forward. And you, I'm sure you know this too, but I do this with, I do a one-on-one coaching and I do it in groups, and I do it no more than eight in a group. And I've got a group going now of eight women, and oh my God, the ability to connect, the ability to care and to listen and to love, that thing that women have.
Oh, with it's amazing. Other,
it is delicious. It's so, so good. Different from how men relate.
Yeah, so different. We definitely talk and relate and cry.
And feel together.
Mm-hmm.
Feel like if someone in the group goes into a deep feeling, I just watch the whole group. Oh, we're going there together.
I love that.
It is really beautiful.
So what are some of the components of your program? I know there has to be a forgiveness component, because that's like, obviously your, like your track record over all the things that you've ever done is forgiveness practices. But what are some of the components of that program?
So it's a 3-month program with a few weeks off. Now it's 10 weeks we meet over the coaching program. The first segment is really just building the foundation of your own spiritual truth, your mm-hmm. oneness with God, your divinity, the divinity of everyone, just getting ourselves, because for many of us, that foundation is cracked. We yeah. say the words, but deep underneath it, it's still a, but is this really true? Am I really cared for? Is my faith really strong enough to move me through looking through these patterns?
Yes.
Because if it's not, that's why we shy away. So the first part is really foundational. Then the second part, we look at the patterns, we look at the fears and the expectations. We look at the lie of lack, which is driving our craving to get love outside of ourselves. And I do a teaching on what's called the drama triangle, which is where ego-based Ooh. Relationships live. So that middle section is a lot of inventory, looking at patterns, bringing them up into the light, really seeing like, oh, I've been creating my experience of relationships. I've been thinking it's him. I've been thinking it's that person. I've been thinking it's that. But they begin to see that the patterns that are running them are what's drawing to them those people. So that's the purpose, to bring those to light. And then, yes, the third component and the last segment of it is a 28-day signature forgiveness process that I've created, which is really not so unique in its individual pieces, but in its design. The first week, you just fire hose forgiveness all over yourself. The second week, you fire hose forgiveness over the other person, or whatever way you're focusing it. The third week, you really learn how to embody forgiveness as a way of life. And then it's kind of processes and practices. So by the end, you really, the goal is you get to the place where you really see that other person as holy,
yeah,
as innocent. You're innocent. They're innocent. And the only thing in the way are these fears and these
yes.
patterns. But those can be changed. Those do not need to own you.
Which is, it's not easy. It's not easy to acknowledge patterns and to acknowledge and take responsibility. I think that's like one of the hardest components, is like swallowing that of like, this is a pattern that I have held space for and that I have nurtured. You know, I'm like, I have taken care of this pattern. I have ensured that this pattern exists in my life. And so it's great to have that program, to have something in step that can help you like address that, acknowledge it, take responsibility, release it, forgive it, and then move forward. You know, how do you move forward from that? You know?
Yeah. And this is what happens, Whitney. People, it's like, if this is you and this is the pattern, we become collapsed and we think we are the pattern. So when I say, when we say, I'll just let go of the patterns, a part of us is like, but that means let go of me.
I identify with that pattern.
So we disconnect. You're perfect. The patterns need to go. So once we separate the two, it still feels raw. It still feels extremely vulnerable. And there is that unknown, you know, because at this point in the game, people who are willing to do this work are pioneers.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the norm yet.
No. And they're really kind of doing it on their own, in the sense of there's not a whole lot of people to like mirror, you know, or have as an example. So it's very much kind of like a new practice, a new thing. It's very much new. Do you mind kind of defining what you mean by holy? Because I know I do have a large like Christian religious audience, but I don't know if people understand your version of holy. When we think holy, we think like devout, you know, nun, you know, or priest.
Yeah, I don't mean that. Holy relationship is anchored in, it is anchored in love, but it's anchored in an expression of unconditional love. And a holy relationship is meant, its purpose is to bring you to your own awakening of your oneness with God and your oneness with the other person and the innocence of your being. So a holy relationship is not a perfect relationship. It's not about it being, oh, now I found the one and everything's good, so this must be holy. A holy relationship is the intention for the relationship, which is, we're not going to use this relationship to trap each other. We're not going to use this relationship to affirm that I'm okay if you're here or if you're gone. Or we're going to release this relationship from all the made up constructs that the world says it's supposed to be. And we're going to give this relationship to the Holy Spirit. We're going to say, let this relationship be used for us both to be healed from the belief that we're separate from God, that we're separate from our goodness, that we're separate from love. It becomes a very sacred place for sure. But it also means I don't own you at all. Your joy is all that matters to me. And anything less than that, I've got to do the healing on. And back to Byron Katie, she says, you know, you're there when someone comes home and says, you know, I've met someone else and I really want to go be with them now. I feel I'm done here. And you pack their bags and you bless them on their way, because you know that all you want for them is their joy and their good. So holy relationship is no clinging. It's no codependency. It's no futurizing. It's so not the constructs of the ego.
No, you're supposed to be attached, you know?
Attached. You're supposed to have a guaranteed future.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. That's so different. So it's kind of like going back to the purity of what relationships are, like, is what holy kind of means in that sense.
I think that we do have paradigms of this on our planet already. We just have to move them into romantic relationships, because I do experience a lot of that in friendships. I don't know about you. My friendships, I love them. I I'll listen to anything. I'm not threatened by their pain. I'm not, you know what I mean? If they're having an affair, that's not going to affect me. I'm just going to love you. I'm sorry you're in that pain, but I'm not going to leave you
right.
because you're struggling with something. Like my friendships are a representation of that. So I think our love relationships need to become friendlier.
Mm-hmm. In that sense, more accepting,
yeah.
less attached in that sense of like, I need you, you know, which
right.
is also romanticized a lot.
Right.
Like,
and
I
if you had
you.
A girlfriend call you upset, like, Whitney, I need to talk. I've got something going on. You'd be like, I'm here.
I'm here.
I'm here. What do you need? This isn't about me. This is about you. And that's what we need more of in our
yeah.
romantic relationships.
I love that. So this program is available now. I think you have something coming up in April. And then this program basically is available kind of in seasons since you have only 8 members at a time. So where can they find you, Mark, on your website and all of that? Where can they find you and connect with you?
My website is markanthonylord.me. And that's where they can learn more about the program if they're interested in exploring that. I mean, I do have a few one-on-one coaching spots open, but I launch groups periodically. Yeah, my next one's coming up soon, but there'll be other ones for sure. I haven't figured out the rhythm of it yet. I'm kind of letting it inform me on how it's to go and to grow. But it's just such a richly rewarding thing to sit in a circle and have this kind of conversation.
Yeah, it's amazing. The work you do is amazing. I get to witness it pretty much daily. So it's an honor to have you on and to dive deep into this. And thank you so much for sharing so personally and vulnerably in this episode.
Well, thank you for creating this podcast. It's really cool.
Thanks, Mark.